How does our body protect us from foreign invaders? We have generalized defense systems. We're going to cut out, we're going to keep our skin out there so that those bacteria, those viruses can't penetrate into us. We've got mucus for the areas we can't have thick skin. I put a question in the review material that talked about what is the most likely way to get sick? Is it eating something that has the pathogen on it? Is it shaking hands with somebody who has the pathogen? Or is it getting it on your hand and rubbing your eye, the eye? Because it's only protected by this mucus. When you're rubbing your eye, you're pushing that mucus membrane away. You're letting that pathogen have an easier way of getting to your body. So remember that, all right? That will be helpful. And that should make that, I don't know if I actually put, did I put the answers in the review material? Okay, but I didn't put the answers for the review questions up yet. Okay, yeah, that's what I thought. There was a problem with that file too, so. Okay, we also bomb the iron. We have iron binding compounds. That limits the amount of bacteria that can be produced. We're making it harder for them to reproduce. Talk about lactoferrin transferrin. Lactoferrin we see in breast milk for babies, all right, to help them protect against disease because they have very, very few ways of dealing with disease. And we're going to see why as we look through here today. Another generalized defense that I didn't really put up here, but I probably should, is fever. Fever. We talked about enzymes quite a bit. What happens to enzymes at high temperature? Denature. So what can we do? Jack up the temperature. All of a sudden, these bacteria have trouble surviving within us. The problem is when we increase that temperature way, way high, right? Now, adults have secondary immune responses, this antibody-mediated or cell-mediated response, okay, depending on what is happening. So we don't have to, as adults or as adolescents, really, increase our fever to dangerous levels. Babies, on the other hand, and we'll see why, don't necessarily have access to these, all right? So what they have to do is they have to increase their temperatures to sometimes dangerous levels. If your baby gets a fever of 103, it's time for the emergency room. They can go up to 105 and 106. You need to get them cooled down. Now, in some professions, they actually show you effective ways of cooling down the baby. I'm not going to go through that because I'm not going to be responsible for that. But, no, absolutely not. You want to, if you are not a medical professional or someone who has been trained on how to reduce the fever of a child, you want to have a professional looking at this child. Absolutely.
But once it starts reaching those levels, you need to be careful. So what effect does that baby Tylenol have on that child?
Reduces the fever, right? Is this a good thing or a bad thing? So what's happening? We're allowing that pathogen to survive. We're allowing that pathogen to survive a longer period of time.
You have to keep the fever down so that the baby doesn't kill itself, but you have to allow the child the ability to kill whatever is trying to, well, take over and kill the child.
That's why I say you have to take the baby to a medical professional.
Trying to balance that out can be very, very dangerous for your child. You do need to fight it off. The baby needs to fight it off. And we'll talk about that in just a few moments, actually. It's that tough balance. That's why you want...
So if adults get fevers, are we kind of working against ourselves like
normal? Certainly. We'll talk about that in a later lecture. Study results and things like that about it. So if you're infected, we have these protein tags. So I'm going to draw up our cast of characters. So, we need space in the middle, alright, we've got cell-mediated, antibody-mediated, got our little name tags, right? Got our little name tags. Hello, my name is Bob, right? We have Bob the bacteria. Hello, me. My name is me. We're going to have different things coming in. Each of these name tags is an antigen, okay? The ID tag on the cell surface. So, antigen. White blood cells read these antigens to determine what is and isn't you. These macrophages, macro means big, phage means eater, they're just big eaters, that's what the name means. These macrophages find the invader and eat him. So what does the macrophage do? It eats not you, okay? Not me. It eats not me. So if it's Bob, it's Bill, it's Simon, the bacteria.
macrophage is going to eat it because it's not you. Important distinction. So, general response, macrophage eats not you. You probably want to write that one down, okay? Macrophage eats not you. We have two major lines. We have this antibody-mediated and then cell-mediated. Antibody-mediated, or invaders in bloodstream. And the cell-mediated is for invaders in the cell. When it's in the bloodstream, we have one option. When it's in the cell, we have a different option. Let's see what paths we take. Cell-mediated is usually for viruses. We usually have to do this for viruses, okay? That's another important thing. Viruses are very, very, very small. Very hard for that big macrophage to find them and properly dispose of them. So a lot of times, it has to wait until those viruses start infecting you. They have to find a host. Antibody-mediated. B cells. When you're born, you have quite a bit of variant B cells, okay? Each has an antibody that matches one singular foreign antigen exactly. In the body, one that matches one antigen, okay? Like a lock and key, perfectly, absolutely connects on. So you're born with some of these. You have some when you're born. When it attaches to the particle, whatever it is, bacteria, if a virus is big enough, it'll grab it. If it attaches, it sends out a chemical signal that screams, hey, hey, Bob is in the building. B cell yells, hey, hey. It attaches, it locks on, and it starts shouting. Hey, look at this guy. Hey, somebody eat this guy. This guy's a problem. Get rid of this guy. It keeps these antigens after it kills them. Okay, the macrophage will keep them. Macrophages keep all these antigens. They're floating around. It attaches to the B cell. Everything's on song, all right? We've got the macrophage floating around. Eventually finds our other third very important character in our play, the helper T cell. Helper T cell. Riding along. B cell found somebody. B cell found Bob. B cell attached to Bob. B cell shouted, hey, hey. Macrophage ate them both. B cell didn't get digested. It's hanging out with the macrophage. Macrophage is floating around. He bit these fatties and eater. Runs into this guy named Helper T. So here we see this actually happening. We see the big giant macrophage. The big black part is macrophage. Big macro. We see the bacteria. And then we see the B cell. Okay, just hanging along. Hanging along. The helper T, if it finds that an antigen is common, that means that if it finds that there are a lot of this antigen present, it does a bunch of things. The helper T, once it finds helper T, it makes more macrophages. So number one, it's going to make more macrophages. Number two, it's going to make B cells and plasma cells, which generate more antibodies. And lastly, it makes B cells create memory B cells. These are long-term survivors. These memory B cells remember the infection. I'm going to remember you. Memory B cells remember it, and they're in the body. So if that infection tries to infect you again, what happens? Memory B latches on. Memory B shouts, hey, hey, this guy's back. Bob's back. Hey, everybody, Bob's back. Eat Bob. Make more macrophages, come eat Bob. Okay? Small children, babies, don't have this memory. They can't effectively deal with these infections quickly. So these infections are able to start investing in cells. They can start destroying cells more readily. There's no outside defense. Now, this is when Bob is floating around in the blood. Bob's floating around in the blood. What happens when Bob is in a cell? Memory B cells, you keep them for the rest of your life. So once you've had it, you shouldn't have it again, unless it mutates. That's why we need flu shots. Because it mutates. It changes its antigens. Absolutely. Absolutely. Same thing with the flu. That's how you gain immunity. Antibodies, if there were not memory B, these antibodies only remain for a few months. That memory B is around so that if it sees it again, it says, whoa, let's make more antibodies, all right? Let's make some antibodies. Flu shots, so the flu shot injects dead or weakened viral particles into your bloodstream. So what's it doing? You're putting some of this flu in your body. Why can it be particles into your blood? Why can it be particles? Because all you need
is the antigen. All you need to find is the antigen that doesn't read me.
As long as it says, hello, my name is flu Z, or flu Y, or whatever,
okay?
Flu whatever letter you want, okay? As long as it says it's flu something, your body's going to destroy it. And if there's enough of it in your bloodstream, your body's going to make memory B cells.
If your body makes memory B cells, what happens? That new flu virus comes in, and what do?
Fight it off.
You instantly go, memory B, start shouting, hey, hey,
eat this guy. Make more macrophages. Eat that guy.
Your body does respond as if
you have an infection. The flu shot isn't actually giving you the flu. You will have some symptoms, right? You'll feel slow.
You might get a mild fever. You might have some small issues with it, but it should not actually give you the flu.
It should give you immunity to the flu. That's why when people have weakened or weaker immune systems, we tend to make sure they get flu shots.
Who do we ask to get flu shots?
Old people
and little kids. Old people, that immune system's been working for a real long time.
It's tired.
Doesn't work as well. Little kids, they don't have memory B cells yet. They might not have memory B cells for any of these strands. So that's why we do all the vaccinations that we do. Prevent these things from infecting them.
So that's how we deal with things in the bloodstream. Now, like I said, we get these symptoms because your body says, oh no, there's something inside of me that might be causing problems. I'm going to deal with it as I would any other.
Your body doesn't know any better. So does it give you a fever?
Could.
Whatever you normally do,
if you have this kind of infection, your body goes through those steps. But does the flu shot actually give you the flu? You just get parts of it. You just get those little antigens so that you can make antibodies against it. Basically kind of like a guard dog system. B cell kind of yells out for macrophages. Macrophages find it, eat it. When they find helper T helps you out. It makes more of all the things you need, okay? And it prevents it from being a problem later on. If it's in the cell, we've got all sorts of problems. We have to draw a whole new picture. Because all of a sudden, we're not just me. We're me and Bob. We're happy together, all right? So we've got our cell. We've got the protein coat from the bacteria. Then we've got a tag that says, hello, this is me. And we've got a tag that says, hi, I'm Bob. So now I'm me Bob, or Bob me, okay? Me and Bob, together. I've got both. Because once this invests in, okay, how this virus or bacteria gets in,
it connects to your cell and loses its plasma membrane onto yours. So you have just one plasma membrane now. It's not like sitting inside, floating around, all happy. No. Bonds, one thing now. Okay, one thing.
Got a nucleus, then you've got your DNA and its DNA. Its little DNA is now in your nucleus. Not good. So, when you're copying things, what are you copying? Not just your DNA, but its DNA. When you translate that RNA that you just copied, you don't just translate what you want, you translate what it wants. Not good. Right? So we're making more of whatever this wants, which is usually the bacteria itself or the virus. A macrophage, what does macrophage look for? It looks for not you. So let me add that on here. Only eats not you. It will only eat it if it doesn't say you. That's a good thing, right? Why is that a good thing? Because if for some reason the white blood cells in your body get that signal wrong, what do? They eat all of you, right? They start destroying you.
They will go in and they will rip apart whatever it is. These macrophages are also the reason that we have to keep people on specific drugs when they get transplants. What's the transplant going to say?
Not you.
Whoever the transplant, whoever lost the organ was, it's going to say them, right? It's not going to say you, it's going to say them. What's your macrophages going to do?
Yeah.
Eat them, right?
So you have to keep those macrophages in check. So that's why we have to be on those immunosuppressants if we have any organ transplant. Macrophage won't work because it only eats not you. What will work? Something will. The Terminator, alright? The Terminator, you come in, alright? Killer T cells. Killer T cells, alright? Killer T like the Terminator, alright? He'll come in and he will kill anybody who matches a certain descriptor. Cytotoxic CT cells, or killer T cells, are specific, okay? They look for something in particular that's very similar to a B cell, right? Very, very similar to a B cell in that they look for something specific, looking for a specific antigen. Remember in the movie, Arnold was looking for Sarah Connor, right, the whole time, and he just kept asking people if they were Sarah Connor? Same thing. Killer T cell wants to find Sarah Connor. Macrophages are just looking for anything that's not you. But the Terminator, he's looking for somebody. That's important. It can find the target more easily if there's an antibody attached. Basically, somebody's waving flags, come get this guy. The Terminator's pretty good at going and getting you. Not a problem. But yeah. Oh, how about, yeah, there's a good example. Remember, he looks in the phone book, finds their phone number, finds all their different locations, right? Same thing. That's shouting where they are, right? So that's those antibodies being attached. You can find her more easily if she's in the phone book. The Terminator doesn't discriminate. The Terminator doesn't care if there's collateral damage. The Terminator just destroys everything that's a problem. If your name is Sarah Connor, Arnold's going to take you out. Same thing here. So we've got a big killer T cell. Looks for Bob. We'll kill anything called Bob. Remember, he didn't care who it was. As long as their name was Sarah Connor, they were gone, right? He's going to take them out. Same way.
So the helper T cell makes the cytotoxic T cell?
The helper T cell is going to make this cytotoxic T cell. Yep, that's the next line, right? Created by this helper T cell, okay? It's making the breeding. Arnold will go around and he will take out anybody called Bob. Alright, Bob's on the list. Skynet doesn't like it. So, helper T cell creates it. Notice both of these key factor is helper T. We form this long-term immunity based off the helper T. We make more and protect better if we've got the helper T. We can only make the Terminator if we've got helper T. Keep that in mind. Keep an eye on that. Helper T is kind of the linchpin. It's got the flu. Terminator is with the white arrow. Goes in, destroys the whole thing. See how it's just breaking apart? Killer T cells are very helpful also in taking out cancer. Remember, I may not have said this. Remember when I was talking about cancer, I said it multiple times in your life, around 6 to 7 by the time you're fully done with life. About 6 to 7 times in your life, you will develop cancer and you will fight it off. This is how. All that cancer has to do is mess up once. Just once. And instead of writing down me, it wrote down Emmy. Uh-oh, that's not me. All of a sudden, the Terminator says, you're gone, buddy. All right? Takes him out. All right? And it will take out all of those cancer cells that are miscopying. So it will dead end that cancer and stop. Our body naturally is set up to fight this off. But if the cancer never makes that mistake, if it never miscopies the antigen, if you don't change your name, if your name isn't Sarah Connor, the Terminator's not going to go get you. If it's Mary Connor, he's not going to take you out. Doesn't care. Not worth his time. That's all it takes. If it never miscopies, the Terminator never supports you. Okay? Never helps you out. Macrophages won't do it. Why won't a macrophage do it? Because it's copying some of those antigens incorrectly, that cell will still contain some from previous copies because it's all shared in the same membrane. Remember when we do that cytokinesis, we're pulling from both sides, right? It still shares some of those old antigens. They're still stuck on there. Old name tags that say me. So you've got some name tags that say MB and some that say ME. Macrophages only care, will only eat if it does not say ME. Okay? So if it doesn't say ME, then macrophage will eat it. But since it does, macrophage just says, I'm not messing with that. But you're good. Good enough. I don't care if you're a bad writer. Whatever. Go for it. Terminator, man, don't miss stuff in front of the Terminator. That's where we get the big differences. That's why we have different responses to deal with different problems. Now, I'm going to talk about interferons. I'm going to talk about these quickly. If a cell is infected
it will release something called interferons. These interferons interfere with the ability of another virus or bacteria to bind with a cell. Does it work for that cell?
Nope.
It works for his buddy next door. He sends those out, his buddy next door won't get infected. But the guy who's infected, he's going to get a visit from the Terminator.
He's still going to get terminated. Gotta go. You're breeding more, you gotta go. But those interferons will interfere with the binding to other cells. That's all the more I'm going to say about interferons. These are the ways that we defend against disease. Now I'm going to talk about diseases in general.
I'm going to talk about a disease in specific. Then I guess I'll talk about a couple more diseases in specific if I got a little bit of time, and then there'll be enough time left for questions.
The last two I'll talk about, and this I may or may not. Epidemiology is the study of disease outbreaks. So if a disease breaks out, people who look for people who have the flu,
epidemiologists.
These are people that you'd want to listen to. Center for Disease Control. That's these people. Epi means large. Ology means knowledge, study of large outbreaks. These people pay attention to three specific pools of people. People who have never had the disease, a.k.a. no memory B for it. No memory B, never had the disease. Two, people who are currently infected. People infected, that's an important statistic to know. How many people have it? Last, how many people have had it, got over it, and are now immune? So you look at three sections of the population, they should assumably add up to 100%, right? People who never had it, people infected, and people who had the disease and are now immune. I'm going to leave all this on the board to come back with. But it's basically a big pie. If you have a new outbreak, you have a big section, or number one, people who have never had the disease. A bigger slice, number two. Smaller slice is number three. You're going to have a big outbreak because there are a lot of people who can be susceptible to this disease. If we switch it to, all of a sudden, this disease is not worrisome at all. Three means people have had it, they're recovered, they're immune, no worries. Two are those infected. Number one is people who haven't been. We don't have a whole big population to infect them, so we shouldn't have any big, big problems with this disease. So they're always playing with these numbers, this pie, seeing which portions are larger than others. So what was the dangerous one? What was the scary one? One, two, three. One's big, two's moderate, three's small.
You're going to have big, big issues. Why would three be so small? Well, there could be multiple reasons. It could be very new, or it could be very deadly. It's very deadly. That's a huge problem.
If it's very deadly, you got to get rid of number two. You got to get this down. Three is fine because they live. One is in trouble. Two's probably going to go anyway if you have low survival rates. This pie keeps changing depending on how infections spread. What factors affect the rate that the disease is passed on? Contact. How much interaction is there between any two people?
In high population centers, you have high degrees of contact. In a city, there are more people packed into a smaller space. They're in contact more often.
In a rural area, lower degree of contact. You're not as packed together. Communicability. How easily is it passed from one to another? How easily is it passed? Pretty easily, not so easily. Pretty important. Virulence. How fatal it is. How fatal is it? If it's extremely fatal,
it's going to be a little bit more difficult to send from one to another, isn't it? If you're dead, you can't really pass something on.
Degree of contact, communicability, and virulence. How fatal it is. AIDS. AIDS is what I'm going to talk about. AIDS is the scary bad guy, because he is a scary bad, okay? Big, big problem. AIDS is acquired immunodeficiency syndrome. Acquired. You got it from somewhere. You got it from somewhere. Someone. Immunodeficiency. It causes you to have a deficient immune system, a less effective immune system. That's problem. Syndrome. There are quite a few different symptoms. AIDS is, the statement of AIDS is actually a characterization of the symptoms. The disease itself is HIV. So AIDS is the symptom. AIDS, having AIDS and having HIV are slightly different statements, but if you have HIV, we're going to see, you're in a bad place. HIV is a retrovirus. It invests into your cell, and it copies its genes into your DNA. It's part of you. You get it? It's part of you. Every time the cell reads DNA, they make more virus. Eventually, you make enough virus where that cell ruptures, and all that virus goes out and starts finding new cells to invest and destroy. HIV kills helper T. When we look at how we defend ourselves, we see this killing helper T. All of a sudden, we realize exactly how bad AIDS is. It breaks the back of the immune system. It comes in and absolutely destroys it. The linchpin, the most important part, is gone. Helper T out the window. That's no good. When HIV drops your helper T cell count, when it kills enough, that's when you have AIDS. That's when the syndrome, the suite of symptoms, become obvious. So you didn't have AIDS up until this point. You didn't have the symptoms. You had HIV. You absolutely had HIV before that. And you could infect others with HIV before that. We don't see it until it starts breaking the back of your immune system really, really bad. How do we fight it? This is a virus. Best way to fight it is just to prevent infection. So number one way of preventing infection, I know people don't like it, reduce your degree of contact. What's that really called? Abstinence. Number one, abstinence. Okay? Abstinence is good. It will keep you alive sometimes. Alright? Living a boring life is sometimes better than not living a life. Sometimes to other people it's not the case. You can also reduce the number of partners you have. Be very selective. That's important. Have a very low number of partners, you are less likely to contract any sexually transmitted disease. Way more important, not really, but very important, choose less promiscuous partners. Don't sleep with people who sleep around. If you don't sleep with people who sleep around...
I couldn't hear that because I forget. I'm going to assume I don't want to.
Huh?
You can't say the same.
Actually, I'm going to keep talking about it. Okay, I'm going to keep talking. There's another area we go to. Less promiscuous partners. Very important. The less contact they have, the less contact you in turn have. Every person, whoever you sleep with, every person they've ever slept with, you're sleeping with right now. You're getting everything that they have. Whenever they slept with them, if they passed it, if they had it at that point, you're getting it. It's coming down the pike. It's still there, not going away. If you don't want to do that, which you're adults and make your own decisions, right? If you don't want to do any of that, we can reduce the communicability. Wear a condom. Make it more difficult for the disease to pass from one person to another.
Use clean needles.
If you're an intravenous drug user, use clean needles. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think I would encourage using clean needles in general, all right, for basic life. I don't think I'd carry around dirty needles, period. But anyway, HIV doesn't kill people. That's the important thing to remember. It doesn't kill you. It makes it so other things can. And until you see the suite of symptoms, you don't know you have it. You don't know you're passing it to other people. You don't know that you're basically killed. You don't know. You can pass that virus for a long, long time before it starts showing. How do we fight AIDS? How do we fight AIDS?
Antivirals.
What kind of antiviral treatment are we doing now? We're doing lots and lots. This is a little old. I didn't get a chance to update this as much. Right now what we're doing is drug cocktails. We've been doing this for a little while. We have different inhibitors for different life cycles of the virus, and we give you all these drugs all at once in large volumes. These have side effects. Currently, we're doing this also for Africa. Lots and lots of money is going to providing Africa with this. Instead of promoting the reduction of communicability, we are promoting the ability to keep sleeping around, and we will allow you to keep living. So right now we're getting those cocktails, we're spending a lot of money, giving this to another country. Is this a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't feel like it's my place to say, but it's something that a lot of Americans are unaware of.
That's the problem. You're not aware of where this is going or what this is doing. So, I'm sure a bunch of people would say, hey, cut them off.
Can we really do that?
No.
Why can't we do that? We would kill people. Who would we kill? Small children. Who do you think we're giving these to? We're not just giving them to the parents. We're not giving them these poor small children or these poor women who, in that culture, it was said that if you sleep with a virgin, it will cure AIDS.
Absolutely. That was one of the things that went around. So, quite a few young women were raped
and given HIV, because that is what the society told them would save those men.
So, do they deserve to have it? Should we take it away from them?
Should we start... What does it come down to?
I don't know.
But making you aware of where things are going, where your tax dollars are going, where things are happening in life, I think that's something that I have a right to tell you. But I'm not going to tell you what you should or shouldn't do with it. Go ahead.
AIDS is not hereditary.
Blood transfer.
Small children getting it from their mothers.
Isn't it about 50-50 chance that the kid won't get it?
It can be passed through breast milk.
Certainly, yes, yes, yes. Sorry, couldn't hear you. Yeah, it can be passed through breast milk. There are plenty of ways that it can go. Not commenting on that. Yeah, but not going any further than that. Absolutely. You have a population you can sample. 100%. That's why I say scientists don't really get to talk about morals. We don't get to talk about. We should be told what our morals are because there's a sample population. That's what it looks like to a lot of scientists.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't look like families, small children.
It looks like a sample population.
And that's very different. And that's not fair to those people. I understand that. Boy, I'm going on. Okay. So these inhibitors bind to it. Don't worry too much about that. But don't get AIDS. All right? That's the punchline. Don't get AIDS. The fastest growing segment who are getting AIDS are heterosexuals.
Most times we think of AIDS as a homosexual thing. Okay? Homosexuals get AIDS. Heterosexuals don't. That is absolutely incorrect. Drug users get AIDS. Normal people, college kids, don't.
Absolutely incorrect. You are in danger of getting it every time, okay? It's 4 times easier for a man to give AIDS to a woman than a woman to pass it to a man.
It's easier for the ladies to get it from the man. So,
I want time for you guys to ask questions. Always make him wear a condom. Always make him wear a condom. Okay? If you are sexually active, you should be tested for HIV.
Absolutely should. Okay? If you're sexually active, get tested for HIV. If you stay to the end, stay just a few more moments. All right? Don't.
So, make sure you get tested because we know that HIV could be present without us finding it.